so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to Animal Voices Radio Show, Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM co-op radio station CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And today is Friday, January 11th, 2019. I got it right. I thought I wouldn't, but I'm usually good for January, and then by February, I'm back in 2018. I'm your host, Carol Davies McIntosh, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Jen Dobell.
Hello.
And operator Allison Cole.
Hi there.
We have two interviews lined up for you today. The first is in about 10 minutes, and it's with a veterinarian, Dr. Catherine Van Eckert, who works with People for Ethical Treatment of Animals. She's joining us to talk about down, and specifically the down that's used by Vancouver's own Lululemon. Our second interview is with author and activist Mark Hawthorne, who has recently updated and released his book, Striking at the Roots. Mark will be talking about the updates in his book with a focus on self-care for activists, people, our animals too, he says, and sharing other resources that he considers important. We have that interview in about 20 minutes. So, speaking of self-care, I've been thinking a lot about it in this new year and wondering how to get a little more energy, a little more hope, a little more optimism going forward. I'm finding that it's kind of overwhelming with the whole climate change issues, and I'm looking for some answers. So, Jen, you got a little story that you wanted to share.
I have a story of hope. Just when you think somebody has absolutely zero interest in stopping their funding of harm toward animals, and when you think that there's no way that they're going to take their head out of the sand and recognize the way that they're living is harmful, they do, if you stick with them in the conversation. And I'm the kind of person who used to just walk away the first time somebody would say something aggravating, which we hear all the time, like plants have feelings. Right. I'm not going to stop eating meat because plants have feelings. I was speaking with someone today who said that to me, and I decided to get into my Zen mode and just keep talking to them. It took about half an hour, and by the end of it, we became Facebook friends. I met him on an online dating site, and he's talking about going vegan.
So how did you get into your Zen mode?
I just remembered how many times I've witnessed on YouTube videos some of the more well-known animal rights activists that travel around the world and have these conversations with people at vegan outreach events. Mm-hmm. And when I watch them, I see myself in those scenarios, and I know what I would do. I would walk away thinking that person is the last person in the world that's ever going to go vegan. They don't even care about animals. They've just spent 20 minutes arguing for their right to continue harming them when I've told them they can eat something else. There's no hope. But if you watch these videos with these activists, or even if you come and do activism with me and the activists in Vancouver here, you will witness people making transformations that you least expected.
Well, I do see that, but I guess it's not just the whole animal, eating animals, harming animals, using animals thing. It's also the climate that's getting me. And I'm finding that those two are linked. Yeah. They're also linked with human abuses that are going on in the world too. And there's so much, we're so aware of all of these things that are going on in the world now. There's nowhere to hide. They're all over the internet. They're all over people. There's posters. It doesn't matter where you go, you see it. So I understand why people get into this willful ignorance or psychological refuge kind of thing where they're protecting themselves against issues they can't or don't want to address. I understand that.
Well, before the show started, you told me that a lot of people you talk to about this say, I just want to live out the rest of my life. I can't make an impact on what needs to be changed to save the state of the world for humanity's benefit. Right? And I hear
that
a lot too.
Yeah.
But what you're suffering from is Vistopia. You know this, right?
Well, I have skimmed through Claire Mann's book on Vistopia, mm-hmm. and I do understand it. But I think it's... I think it's even more than that. Like, it's not just the Vistopia is about vegan dystopia. So it's living in a world where you don't fit in, where things are black when you look at it, or very dark. But I think with all of the other stuff laid over top of the Vistopia, there's what the word is for it. Allison, were you going to say
existential dread?
Well, what I was going to say is this reminds me of the chat that my sister and I had on last week's show, where she says that being vegan is like you've seen a ghost and you're trying to tell everyone about the ghost, but no one's believing you.
Right.
And Jen, what you were saying about the way that people act in that they don't want to listen and they don't want to know and they think, like, I just want to live out my life and that's all, and I'm not going to worry about everything. That is the attitude that gets us into this position in the first place.
Heads in the sand. Yeah.
Heads in the sand. So it's a terrible cycle, right? Mm-hmm. And if you keep going in that direction, it's just going to get worse and worse. So what I feel is, like, if anything, we need to reverse that attitude. Well, I think all three of us in here, are trying our best.
Right.
We have to work extra hard to reverse the attitudes of everyone else on the earth, because we share the planet with them.
And yes. I just want to say something right now. I was just having a conversation with a friend this morning on Facebook about a Facebook group called Vancouver Vegans, which has somewhere in the number of 7,000 members. Mm-hmm. Hardly any of them do any activism. Imagine if they did. And same thing with the Greenpeace members. A lot of them are not even vegetarian. They're not making the connection between how much their diet harms the earth, yet they call themselves environmentalists. If we could wake everybody up and say, if all of you could do some kind of activism, there's a chance of turning this around. Right?
There is a chance of turning it around. It means everybody has to work towards it.
Yeah.
And it can't just be a few people. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
So you had some good news for us, right?
I do have some good news for us. And I later on in the show, I even have some events. If you're inspired by our discussion just now and you actually want to be part of the solution, stay tuned in the next hour. We'll talk about how you can get involved and be really inspired to make some change. So many news stories. Okay. After hearing arguments from animal justice lawyers, an Ontario court has ruled that animal law enforcement by the OSPCA, a private charity, is unconstitutional because the agency is not sufficiently accountable or transparent. And animal justice intervened in the case of Bogart versus the Attorney General of Ontario, a legal challenge to the OSPCA's investigative and police powers that was heard in a courthouse in Perth, Ontario in May 2018. Animal justice was in court to ensure the best interest of animals were front and center, and has long been concerned that while the public cares deeply about animal protection, the government pushes responsibility for enforcing animal protection laws onto a private charity. The OSPCA receives minimal funding and must fundraise to support its operations. Animal Justice pointed out that this itself could be a conflict of interest, as the organization may receive donations from the very individuals it may be investigating. The OSPCA is also not subject to reasonable transparency and accountability or oversight like other public law enforcement agencies such as the police. For example, police services legislation and freedom of information laws don't apply to the OSPCA, nor is it subject to oversight by the ombudsman. Because of animal justice's arguments on behalf of the animals, the court recognized a new principle of fundamental justice that an agency with police or investigative powers must be transparent and accountable, or it will not comply with the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. The Ontario government now has an incredible opportunity to review animal law enforcement and ensure in the best possible way that it will benefit and protect animals. Animal protection laws are currently the only laws still funded by a private agency, and so we're hoping animal justice can make some change here. On Wednesday, a U.S. federal judge struck down an Iowa law that made it illegal to get a job at a livestock farm in order to conduct an animal cruelty undercover investigation, finding that the law violated the constitutional right for free speech. U.S. District Court Judge James Gertzinger sided with the opponents of the 2012 law that was intended to stop organizations such as PETA and Mercy for Animals from doing animal abuse investigations at farms and puppy mills. Great news, because this is how a lot of people going go vegan, is they see these undercover investigations that take place in farms that they're purchasing these animal products from. And now I have a really funny news story. You're going to love this. A deer poacher is being forced to watch Bambi in jail. David Barry Jr. and his family illegally killed hundreds of deer for their heads and antlers, leaving the bodies to rot. So now a Missouri judge will force Barry Jr. to watch Disney's Bambi once a month during his entire year in jail. The movie features a traumatizing scene where the mother deer is killed by gunshot, and Judge Robert George seemingly wants Barry Jr. to learn a lesson from the Disney film. His father and brother will also be heading to jail for violating their felony firearms probation and taking wildlife illegally. That's funny. I didn't know judges had that power to force people to watch Disney movies.
I guess they can do pretty much anything.
I wish we could do that with all animal abusers with all sorts of abuse.
Make them watch Earthlings or something. Do we have time for a couple more news stories? I've got lots of good news today.
Yes, we do.
Let's see here. The United States Supreme Court refused to hear arguments against California's foie gras ban. The court's action means that once again, no business may sell or produce foie gras in California. And this law has been in place since 2004, but I believe there were some loopholes that were found. So now there will be no loopholes. And for those of you who don't know what foie gras is, it's considered a delicacy, but it's really just a diseased liver of a goose or duck. And they are force-fed. It's horrific. Look it up on YouTube. One quick more story. Gautier Soho, a French fine dining restaurant in London that served approximately 144 pounds of foie gras every week, recently announced plans to go 100% vegan. The owner was inspired by PETA activists, who were the driving force behind this decision. And he was recently speaking at a conference for chefs and restaurateurs and talking about how cruel foie gras is. Mm. So here we are again. The theme of today, the power of transformation. You never know. Just keep talking to people about the truth, right?
That's
you never
right.
know. It's, there's hope.
You have to keep on, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now we have Dr. Catherine Van Eckhart on the line today to chat about down and Lululemon's involvement with it. Catherine is a veterinarian who works with the People for Ethical Treatment of Animals as a corporate liaison to various industries, intersecting with their corporate objectives and PETA's objective of improving animal welfare. Thanks for joining us today, Catherine.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
First of all, can you explain where down comes from and how it's typically obtained?
Absolutely, yeah. So birds used in the down industry come from factory farms, and as we all know, that means that they're spending their entire lives in overcrowded, filthy conditions, been denied everything natural and important to them. The birds used to create down are ducks and geese. Mm-hmm. And once these birds are ready for slaughter, they're grabbed by the neck or the legs and stuffed into transport crates. They're then subjected to really grueling journeys through all manner of weather extremes. And depending on the country, you know, they generally can be deprived food or water for over 24 hours, if not longer. Right. And once they're at the slaughterhouse, their throats are slit, often while they're still fully conscious. So it's an incredibly cruel industry.
And is that the way that this product, this down product, comes to us, is through basically they're being raised for meat? Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So the vast majority of down comes from birds who are either raised for meat or foie gras, which you've obviously mm-hmm. just been talking about.
Right.
And in fact, as much as 15% of a farm's profits can come from the sale of feathers. So it's really important for listeners to understand that this isn't just a byproduct that would otherwise go to waste. This is mm-hmm. a really important what we call co-product that's
right.
helping to maintain these industries.
So so it's keeping them in business, essentially.
Yeah, very much so.
What are the environmental aspects of this co-product? And also, something we don't always talk about is, what's the human cost? Who's doing the work, and how is it for those people?
Yeah, great questions. So in terms of the environmental aspects, down production is, you know, part of the animal agricultural industry, which, as everyone knows now is the single greatest man-made contributor to climate change. In fact, animal agriculture is responsible for more greenhouse gas emissions than all of the world's transport systems combined. But particularly goose and duck farms, they generate massive amounts of manure and slaughter waste as well. They use copious quantities of water, not just to maintain the environmental conditions on the farm, but also to produce the corn that's fed to these birds. They contribute to the gas emissions we discussed, and they pollute the surrounding air and water and land as well. Going on to the human costs, I mean, it's actually obviously terrible for these animals, but also really terrible for the workers involved. These workers are expected to pluck thousands of birds over the course of a single workday. Wow. If you put yourself in their shoes, they're grabbing birds, yanking out their feathers, often leaving gaping wounds in their skins. It's incredibly stressful for the birds, but also really stressful for the people having to work in these conditions. I actually, originally a veterinarian, I've worked in a lot of animal agriculture industries myself, and I can tell you that being exposed to those kind of environments, they're noisy, they're stressful, they're dirty, you're expected to rush like that and injure animals in the process. It's really damaging to people's psyches.
It's traumatic and for them.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier the importance of eyewitness footage, so people can see for themselves in these investigations just how horrific the conditions are.
So getting on to Lululemon, what do they use their down in?
So they use their down in insulated jackets, but I should note that a lot of the jackets that they sell actually contain cruelty-free synthetic down alternatives instead. So we're really left to wonder why they're continuing to use down, given that it's so easy for them to replace it with items that they're already selling.
So they're already using alternatives, but they're bringing in down-filled products as well.
As well, yeah. So we're really urging them to eliminate the cool down products and just continue using the alternatives instead.
So what involvement has PETA had with Lululemon over this? It seems to me that this has been going on for a few years. Is that right?
Yeah, we've actually been working with them since 2011, which is a while ago now, but we've just seen no progress. We do own some stock in Lululemon, which means that we can have a presence at their shareholder meetings. We did attend last year's shareholder meeting, and Lululemon at the time committed to engaging with us in talks, but they then failed to make good on that pledge. So we submitted another resolution for this year's shareholder meeting, where we're once again going to ask them to stop selling items containing down.
Was that in December of last year? 2018?
We submitted the resolution, last year in December, yeah.
Okay. Do you know what that resolution says?
So that's essentially offering the question. Any shareholder is able to ask companies questions, and PETA's questions are always involved, you know, asking why companies are continuing to sort these practices. So in this case with Lululemon, we're asking, why are you continuing to sell down?
Well, and Lululemon promotes compassion and love and friendship and environmental stewardship and all warm and fuzzy things. So how do they, how can they say that they do that and also sell a cruel product? Have they responded?
That is a very good question, and something that we also ask. You know, they're a yogi brand. A lot of people go to them for that reason. But they are claiming to, you know, these wonderful values. But unfortunately, the reality is that all birds used for their down spend their entire lives in these crowded and filthy conditions, and they're, you know, denied all things natural and important to them. They're slaughtered in inhumane ways. They can often hit the defeathering tanks while they're still conscious and able to feel pain. One important point is that they are sourcing down from China, and there are no regulations in China for the treatment of animals and no penalties for abusing them. Traceability becomes a really big problem. There are a lot of middlemen in this industry, so it's hard to track things down. You can't just look at a feather and determine where it's come from and how it's been obtained.
Right.
And again, going back to these investigations, unfortunately, we've found, they've proven time and again, that you just cannot trust any supplier assurances. So, you know, Lululemon is making these claims based on what they believe is going on in their supply chain, but we just find that these suppliers are continuing to lie. Mm-hmm. We actually did an investigation recently of a Chinese supplier. They claim to not live pluck birds, so, you know, rip out the feathers while they're still alive. Yeah, they claim to be part of the responsible down feathers, but we found this investigation, they were live plucking. So it, again, another indicator that we just can't trust any insurances, that the only way to help animals is to use vegan products.
Well, there's really no good way to get down, is there?
That's right, yeah.
You know, as a product, there's no way, there's no cruelty-free way to get it, no matter if they, you know, even if they are using environmental practices that are good and that sort of thing, there's still no cruelty-free way. So that, to me, that seems like the bottom line for Lululemon, and that that's what they should be acting on. So what can concerned folks do about this?
Yeah, so going back to your point just then, there really are no ethical choices when it comes to down. We urge everybody to never buy down. So that means checking labels, down's found in clothing, like the jackets we were talking about, but also in a lot of furniture, like bedding and sleeping bags and, you know, throw pillows and so forth. So checking those labels, ensuring that there are no, there's no down in there, and opting for environmentally friendly, allergen-free, you know, warm, comfortable alternatives instead. There are some really good products out there. Thinsulate, Primaloft. Actually, Primaloft, the brand is down alternative, is used as the premier supplier for the U.S. Army and the Marines and the Special Forces. So there are some really great, very durable options out there. Yeah. And then as well as avoiding the products and opting for vegan options instead, people can get behind and help encourage Lululemon and other companies to stop selling down. So they can visit our website, peter.org, and I believe you shared the petition on your Facebook page as well.
We did,
so sign that petition. That's fantastic.
Yes.
That can, you know, that'll signing that petition will help to urge Lululemon to stop selling down. Please share the petition, share links to investigations, information about down with friends and family so everyone can learn just how cruel this industry is. I think a lot of people don't realize what's involved in producing down, so getting that awareness out. And people can also contact Lululemon directly, maybe even tweet to them and tell them that, you know, you're not going to go and buy from their store while they continue to sell such cool products.
Exactly. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Catherine. We've come to the end of our time, but I really appreciate your involvement today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. And, you know, it's fantastic to see such a compassionate group of people out there. So we, you know, we encourage you to keep up the good work.
We're trying. Well, thank you. We need encouragement. I do, at least. Thank you very much. Bye now.
All right. Take care.
You are listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Did you know that Vancouver Co-op Radio CFRO 100.5 FM has over 90 different shows produced by over 350 community members? This wide range of programming produced by our diverse group of programmers ensures that we have a show you'll love. We have shows on feminism, spirituality, disability rights, politics, unions, and parenting. We play jazz, indie rock, reggae, blues, and folk. We broadcast in a dozen different languages and have more First Nations programs than any other radio station in Vancouver. Find your show on Vancouver Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM. All different, all the time.
I have Mark Hawthorne on the line today to talk about the 10th anniversary edition of his book called Striking at the Roots, A Practical Guide to Animal Activism. Mark has recently updated and expanded this already comprehensive activist manual, which is full of ideas, how to implement those ideas, and even has checklists to get you started. This is certainly something that I wish I had read when I was starting out in activism. I kind of feel like I could have just looked through the chapters and picked out what methods would suit me best and just kind of follow the game plan. Mark is also the author of two other books on animal rights and social justice, Bleeding Hearts and A Vegan Ethic. He also contributes to Veg News magazine, various online sites, newspapers across the United States, and has his own blog, also called Striking at the Roots. Welcome to Animal Voices Radio Show, Mark.
Well, thank you, Carol. It's an honor to be here.
Well, we had to have you because you talked about us in your book, so that was very nice of you.
You're pretty clever of me, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, that's right. I'm curious, to begin with, why you originally called your book Striking at the Roots. It strikes me, no pun intended, that it's some kind of a metaphor. Is that right?
Well, it's from Walden by Henry David Thoreau. He wrote, there are 1,000 hacking at the branches of evil to one who is striking at the root. Long before I was an activist or even a vegan, I was reading Thoreau, and when I began writing the first edition of my book and was thinking of a title, I remembered highlighting this passage in Walden. People today know Thoreau as an author, of course, but he was also an abolitionist and an activist, and he was a pretty severe critic of society. And he called people out who would say one thing and do another, such as being good on Sunday but not the rest of the week.
Mm.
I think he was saying here that humanity has much more potential to do good and should be targeting the root causes of problems rather than just publicly donating to charity. In a similar way, I want to encourage activists to do more to expose the sources of animal exploitation. So that's the significance.
Oh, I like that. That's good. And Walden, I haven't actually read yet, but I'm trying.
Oh, yeah, okay. I highly recommend it.
So what led you to update the book after 10 years?
The main impetus for the update occurred to me a few years ago when I saw how the documentary Blackfish had impacted SeaWorld, getting the company to halt its practice of breeding whales in captivity.
Mm-hmm.
So not only was a film being used as a tool for activism, but people around the world, including celebrities, were promoting the film on social media. And
right.
This was another example of how much influence activism can have. Also, governments, especially in the United States, are doing more to suppress activism. We have ag gag laws and the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act, for example, and I wanted to have updated information on how people could protect themselves during protests. And another major thing I wanted to update was the chapter on self-care, because I felt there was much more to say about that now.
Now, why? Why was there more to say about it now?
Because there's just been so many changes in society. People, especially activists, I think are feeling more pressure. And we also have compassion fatigue and burnout that we're not talking about as much as we should. I think that's changing a little bit, but it's becoming more of an issue, and as I've been in activism longer, I'm hearing from activists and meeting activists who are suffering from these symptoms and being pushed out of the movement also because of, you know, like Me Too issues.
Right.
Women who are being harassed by, you know, their bosses or other men in the animal rights group. So I wanted to focus on that more.
You know, it's interesting that you said self-care, because it strikes me that you're a very busy guy, and you also have a day job. Is that right?
I do have a day job, yeah. I do all my writing at night and on weekends. Yeah.
How do you do all of that and still stay sane?
I just try to find balance.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of it is not making activism or any one thing your entire life,
mm-hmm.
And having a wonderful partner who is supportive and understands the need for taking a break, and we're very privileged to be able to travel. You know, we're taking weekend trips or occasionally leaving the country, which is always a nice break. And on Fridays, we turn off our computers and watch silly movies and just try to have what we call Fun Friday.
Right.
And you know, so doing these little things as often as possible, yeah. And just taking steps to also eat well and get plenty of rest, mm-hmm. and get in a bit of exercise all helps.
So the basics of taking care of yourself, and then also sort of the vacationing time, which I assume means not going to a veg fest at that time, but doing something different.
Exactly, yeah. The veg fest we attend, we don't consider that vacation time.
Exactly.
Although, you know, we recently went to the Atlanta Veg Fest and took some extra days to visit the, you know, the King Center, and we went down to Savannah, and so we did take a few extra days to enjoy the sights.
Yeah, good for you. Well, you're doing something right, because you keep on going. So, talk to me about what your favorite section of the book is, now that you've said why you added to it.
Well, I would say that chapter 11, the section on healthcare, is really my favorite section. As I mentioned, compassion fatigue and burnout are very serious, and animal activists often push themselves too hard, but you know, we don't talk about this issue enough.
Mm-hmm.
So this chapter has been greatly updated. I interviewed two therapists for this chapter, Claire Mann, mm-hmm. in Australia,
mm-hmm.
and Jennifer Brown in the United States, who not only specialize in treating activists with compassion fatigue, but who are also both vegan. And I got a lot of wonderful input from longtime activists on how they have dealt with the symptoms of compassion fatigue, the mm-hmm. grief, the depression, the withdrawal. And yeah, I'm especially proud of this section of the book, and I hope readers get a lot out of it.
I think it's one of the most important parts of the book, for sure. And I think that, you know, I know most people that I know, when they first started, they went in with gangbusters, and they went to everything they were invited to or asked to do, they would do. And most of them hit the wall at some point and just realize that you can't do everything. You can't,
yeah.
You can't be everywhere at once. You've got to still take care of your health and your family and all of the rest of the relationships in your life.
So, absolutely.
Speaking of advocates, and I think that most animal advocates are pretty sensitive people, and I know I am, and I know that I feel like if I have to see one more, you know, pig in a gestation crate or any of those things, that it just breaks me every time I see that. There's a little chunk of me broken off, and I have to, when I'm going through social media, I'm scrolling sometimes as fast as I can to get through those things, and not to actually, I sort of see them out of the corner of my eye, but I don't want to focus on them at all. What's an answer to that? Like, in your opinion, is it useful to post cruelty videos and photos on social media?
Some years ago, I wrote a blog post about this very issue, and after looking at two studies and interviewing people in the movement, I concluded that graphic images can have a positive impact. People who consume animals get a very visceral look at how their food is produced, and it makes some mm-hmm. people think twice. So that's positive. But for most activists, I do not think it is helpful to expose yourself to graphic images, especially when you're already familiar with the cruelty
mm-hmm.
that's being shown, or if you're especially sensitive.
Right.
I certainly have images burned into my psyche that haunt me and probably will for the rest of my life. In fact, I try not to follow people on social media who post these images. So please, listeners, do not feel you have to subject yourself to graphic images. Having said that, I do believe we should be educated on the issues,
mm-hmm.
but we can do that by listening to shows like this one or by reading well-researched books on animal exploitation. I think forcing yourself to look at graphic images is going to push you toward that burnout that we were talking about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And also, the other aspect is the live incidents of that. Like, I find that some of the things that I've been to with the SAVE movement, things like that, are so disturbing that I don't
do that particular type of thing anymore. And I think that some people are maybe more sensitive and some people are less sensitive to that type of thing, to seeing that, to actually being there when the animals are, you know, being moved into a slaughterhouse or something like that. It's
right, absolutely. Yeah. Everybody's different. I think the key is to listen to your heart.
Yeah.
And if you think this is too much and it's too upsetting, then do not subject yourself to it. There's no reason that we have to, quote unquote, do this because the animals have it worse.
Is that something you hear a lot? Because the animals have it worse? So.
Yeah, that's an excuse I hear in the movement. It's like, mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to push myself harder because I'm not the one who's locked in a cage, or I'm not the one who's being killed in a slaughterhouse. And I understand that, but again, we want to be in this movement long term, and I don't think that does anybody any good by having that attitude.
So that's their idea, that they should do it because the animals are suffering more than they are, and of course that's true, but for the most part. But there's also the compassion aspect of advocate to advocate or animal activist to animal activist. There seems to be a push from, to do more in the movement all the time from other activists. And I'm wondering if you've got some words about that.
Are you talking about like infighting in the movement? Or?
Well, no, I'm not talking about that. That's an issue for sure. But I'm really talking about how people try to encourage one another to do more all the time. And in my opinion, there's a bit of a lack of in-house compassion with our fellow activists.
Right. I agree. I think we need to remember that we're all on the same team. I think we all want animal liberation, and we need to remember that even though we're all activists, we all come from a different place, and we all have our own limitations, our own strengths, and our own weaknesses, and be cognizant of that and be compassionate. Now, show the same compassion that you're showing toward non-human animals toward your fellow activists.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think that's really key because, we tend to try to one-up each other. Not everybody. It's not that common. But I have seen it where we want to try to be a quote-unquote hero, especially with social media. We want to post the best image of something,
right,
of ourselves being a hero or doing something in the movement. And I think we need to step back and again, remember that we're all on the same team. We're all fighting for animal liberation, and we're all part of the same effort to do that, and we're stronger as a team than we are as an individual.
Mm-hmm. So try to take care of each other a little bit more than...
Yes, exactly.
And I think misanthropy is rampant in the animal rights movement. I know that it's a lot of times good solid people will get really angry and really start hating on human beings, and I think that's taken poorly by people that we're trying to educate.
Yeah, misanthropy is very problematic in our movement. I see posts of many people who say they love animals and they hate humans, and it's certainly easy to understand why they feel that way, but I don't believe this is the path to liberation for animals, and in fact, it's only a way to feel more miserable. Again, we have to remember that nearly all of us grew up exploiting animals, and we're all on a continuum.
Right, and forgive ourselves as well, I guess, along the way.
Yes, exactly.
For what we didn't know we were doing at the time. So I didn't see it in Striking at the Roots, and maybe I missed it, but I know that you talk about the terms intersectionality and interconnected oppressions, and I'm wondering why we should care about that.
I think you're talking about a vegan ethics. Yeah, but I did mm-hmm. touch on intersectionality a little bit. I try not to use that term when I'm talking about the animal rights movement because that was coined by Kimberly Crenshaw to mm-hmm. specifically apply to women of color experiencing sexism and racism. Mm-hmm. I do like Carol Adams' interconnected oppressions analysis of how speciesism overlaps with racism and sexism.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, whatever you call it, I think we need to confront how our culture objectifies animals and women and treats them as disposable. We need to confront how meat eating is regarded as masculine, that you can't be a quote-unquote real man and be vegan, at least according to some.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, that's changing a bit. And at the same time, we need to stop advocating for animals at the expense of other oppressed groups. I see AR groups trying to promote veganism by using body shaming or sexism mm-hmm. or tactics that are not sensitive to other cultures or what people living in low-income communities experience. The animal rights movement loves to say that there is no moral distinction between animal rights and human rights. Well, if that's so, then it makes sense for us to not ignore human rights, human beings, when we agitate for non-humans. I mean, campaigning against one form of domination while participating in another just perpetuates oppression.
Now, are you also talking about the single issues that we focus on?
Yeah, I don't necessarily have a problem with activism that focuses on one issue, such mm-hmm. as dog sledding or whaling or bullfights or mm-hmm. even veganism. What I do have a problem with is activism that ignores discrimination or abuse associated with it or right. uses racism or sexism to achieve a goal. For example, I object to bullfighting campaigns that refer to Mexicans or Spaniards as bloodthirsty or mm-hmm. Japanese whalers as savages or vegan campaigns that rely on sexism or body shaming. Now, the kind of single-issue activism that focuses on one problem at the expense of others is what I don't like.
Right.
We also lose out on potential allies this way.
We have you're in California, and I don't know if you have this same kinds of issues that we have here on the West Coast in Canada, but there's a lot of Indigenous issues coming to the forefront now, and what they're claiming as their land, which is in fact their land, and they also want to go back to more of the natural ways where they were fishing and hunting and whatnot, and it's a really sensitive issue here because people who are advocating for animals, of course, don't want them to fish and hunt, and yet they don't want to step on their traditions either. So do you have any advice for that particular?
I understand the concern. When I think of activism and potential targets, I see so much more abuse of animals through trophy hunting and canned mm-hmm. hunts than I would subsistence fishing and hunting.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as activists, we should be focusing on the larger picture of these, these trophy hunters and canned hunts
mm-hmm.
than a small group of individuals who are living off the land, so to speak.
Right.
I just think that's a better use of our time.
I agree. But that doesn't mean that I'm right. But
it doesn't mean that I'm right. It's just my opinion.
It's a difficult position, I think, for us all to be in. It's a very sensitive issue for everyone, and unless you can really sit down and talk face to face with somebody about it, I think some of the things that go on social media, etc., are causes of some of the misinterpretations of what people are actually trying to do.
Right. So. Yeah, social media is not the best place to have a conversation.
No, it's really not.
No.
When you talk about, you said you didn't like to use the term intersectionality. Is that because that's kind of an appropriated term, or
exactly?
Is that
It was created, as far as I know, it was created by Kimberly Crenshaw in I think 1989 to describe a very specific mm-hmm. experience of black women. And working at a Ford Motors or some sort of automotive company, and how they experience both racism and sexism.
Right.
And I think that it's become sort of this buzzword in the animal rights movement, and a lot of people use it and don't really understand what it means or where it comes from.
Right.
Yeah. And we have a lot of the English language and other languages are wonderful. We have lots of words we can use. We can use the interconnected oppression that Carol Adams mm-hmm. uses or something else. But No, if somebody uses that term, I'm not going to necessarily correct them to their face or publicly shame them.
Right.
It's just not a term I use.
Right. Okay.
Or try not to use.
No, that's good to know. It, you know, again, it's, I think a lot of us are sort of tiptoeing around, and it's hard to know what, where to step and where not to step, and, you know, what is appropriation and what isn't, and it's a new, it's a learning curve for all of us, I think, right
exactly.
now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm learning as well.
As you go. And so that's
exactly.
Your next book will be about that then. So let's talk about how activists can be a little more effective in what they're doing.
Well, my answer is going to sound radical, or at least counterintuitive, and that is that I think we need to step back from activism and spend time on other things. I think we need to be well-rounded human beings with lives beyond animal advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, don't make all your social media posts about veganism and animals.
Mm-hmm.
Not only will you be happier, but I think the people who follow you will see veganism as a balanced way of life. Now, having said that, I think we need to be educated in the issues to be effective in the movement. And as far as activism is concerned, I think we need to focus our energy on activism that we enjoy most, because that is what's going to nourish us and keep us in the movement longer. I think that's really the key to being effective.
Yes, doing something that you feel works with your own talents or your own mindset.
I get questions often that basically ask, what's the most effective form of activism? And I really shy away from that, trying to define that, because it's different for everybody.
Exactly,
I don't think there's one form of activism that is the most effective. And so when it comes down to it, I think that the key is finding a, whether it's a group of strategies or a tactic or whatever it is, it could be something large like a protest or a corporate campaign, or something small like, you know, baking vegan food for your friends and family, or doing leafleting, or writing letters to editors. You know, whatever speaks to you, whatever you do that uses your strengths and your interests the most is going to nourish you, and that's going to keep you in the movement longer. One of the main goals of this book is to ensure that the individual activist, the grassroots activist, has a long life in the movement, doesn't burn out, you know, finds their niche and can really get something out of it. Not just to feel good like, oh, I'm helping animals, but, you know, they're making friends doing it. They're feeling that they're contributing on a larger whole to society.
Mm-hmm.
So that sounds kind of philosophical, but that's really my goal.
No, I like that. I'm not, and I don't mean my question isn't what's the best form of activism. I totally agree with you. I think that you have to fit it. It's not a one size fits all. We all are different people. We all have different aspects of our personality that are going to lead us in one direction or another. And we need to be where we're comfortable. We don't want to have people that are really shy having to, you know, sort of cold call and go into an area where they're speaking to a lot of people or something like that. But, I like that, what you said about kind of taking a step back, having a life, and showing that veganism isn't always about having to hold up a protest sign or going on a march or, you know, that sort of thing, that it's a life, and it's a good life.
Yeah, sometimes less is more. And again, that might sound counterintuitive, but I want to ensure that we're doing this long-term.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to make sure that we have a balanced life and that we're enjoying ourselves while we're doing it.
Right. I agree. And especially with the state of the world right now, we need that. We need that even more.
Exactly.
So, other than Striking at the Roots, what book or video or website would you recommend to help activists get their message across, or whatever will help them to do their jobs as activists?
I recommend that people learn more about other oppressions and how they're related to veganism. So I would suggest listeners check out the work of Food Empowerment Project, and their website is foodispower.org. and read the blog posts of the founder, Lauren Arnellis. Mm-hmm. The site also has a pretty exhaustive exploration of how animals are exploited. And check out the Sista Vegan Project by Breece Harper. Her website is sistavegan.com.
Can you spell that?
Sure. It's sistavegan.com. It's sistavegan.com. I also recommend Activists Read Growl by Kim Stallwood, which is a wonderful book mm-hmm. about animal advocacy. And listen to podcasts that really, you know, do deep dive into activism, such as The Bearded Vegans mm-hmm. and Vegan Warrior Princess's Attack. Oh, and I love the work of Christopher Sebastian, who has a blog. It's christophersebastian.info.
Okay.
And, yeah, he's just got some great thoughts, and he's very funny. So, yeah, those are just a few resources that people can use.
Okay, that's great for us. And I'll put those up on our on our Facebook page as well, so that people can happily click on them. Do you have any other final words?
I really appreciate everybody who goes vegan, because you're doing something wonderful for the animals. And if you are vegan and find it's a wonderful way of life, I encourage you to spread the word through animal activism and helping others learn about it. And use techniques that you find to be, again, nourishing for you. And don't spend time listening to the haters. You know, don't spend a lot mm-hmm. of time on social media. Mm-hmm. Disconnect from technology.
Mm-hmm.
Find a activism that speaks to you and uses your strengths. And, you know, try to be as compassionate and patient with others as you would hope that they'd be with you.
Those are good words, and I agree with each one of them. Thank you very much for doing this today. It was great chatting with you.
Carol, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
So you've been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM, CFRO Co-op Radio, Vancouver, Canada. Please join us for our next show next Friday at noon, where I will be your host, and I will have an interview with a local animal rights activist, one of my faves, Angel. She's going to be talking about the event that I just announced, the Cube of Truth. She does a lot of organizing for that. And she's also a zero-waste chickie, so we're going to learn about that. Anyway, we want to connect with you. You can stream shows or download shows as podcasts, read our show blog, and subscribe via iTunes at animalvoices.org. Stay in touch with us on Facebook at Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. Send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or email radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Stay tuned for a really great show up next, Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith, former meteorologist. Very interesting environmental show. And thanks for listening to Animal Voices today. Do we have a name on the song we're playing here?
We're playing a song about hope, grasping opportunities, and moving forward.
It's
called Granted by Josh Groban.
Okay.
Have you ever felt it could all go away? If you blink, if you never stop running, you won't fall behind. Who are you? head.